Ladies and gentle beings, hello. Well, first off, I'm delighted to be here as your guest speaker today. I have to say, I've long admired the Darkon Corporation. You've done a lot of splendid work. The climate catastrophe on Nebulon 4, that was you, wasn't it? The strip mining of the Dandarian Belt, who can forget? And the obliteration of the Ostracon Delta. Give yourselves a round of applause for that one. Remarkable. But you don't want to dwell on past glories. No, you want to achieve new things. You've set your eyes on the ultimate prize, which is why you very kindly invited me here to tell you all about invading the Earth. Shall we get started? First slide, please.
Big Finish presents Doctor Who Short Trips. How to Win Planets and Influence People by James Goss. Read by Rufus Hound.
Slide 1. Invading the Earth. Why bother? A very good point, actually. The Earth really isn't that important, that valuable, or even that beautiful. The sunsets are quite nice, I'll give you that. There's some mineral wealth, and the population is nice enough once you get to know them. On paper, it really doesn't seem deserving of all the attention. But the thing is, the Earth is a status symbol. Like a Rolls-Royce or a private pleasure moon, the Earth is terribly impractical, ruinously expensive, but one just has to have it. Yes, madam? But you don't know what a Rolls-Royce is? It's a motor car from Earth, almost worth invading for that alone. Of course, you would have to do something about the dreadful roads. Next slide, I think. Slide 2, do's and don'ts. Basic housekeeping, really. Do get immunised. Some Martians popped by a few years ago without a flu jab. Nasty. Do pack your own food, unless you're invading France. Do think big. Use your biggest flying saucer, your most zappy death ray. The Earthlings will thank you. They love fireworks. Don't forget to pack a range of clothes. The climate on planet Earth is variable, to say the least. And if any of your population are allergic to water, don't land in Wales. Don't forget to think global. The people of Earth don't get on well with each other. One of their largest countries is America. And don't think you can simply atomize it to terrify the rest of the planet. They'll probably just throw you a party. Yeah, funny like that. Don't underestimate the Earthlings. They might not look like much, but they're as tenacious as fleas. And finally, don't forget this man. Yes, I think he deserves a slide of his own. Slide 3. The Doctor. The Doctor. The Doctor. The Doctor. As you can see, he's got a fair number of disguises, all of them laughably flamboyant. Big tip for you, if your security cameras pick up an escaped children's party entertainer heading your way, panic. What can I say about the Doctor that hasn't already been squeaked in rage by every tentacled horror from here to the Horsehead Nebula? The Doctor cannot be planned for. The Doctor cannot be bribed. The Doctor cannot be killed, but boy, everyone wants a go at it. When you've been in the business for as long as I have, chances are you can't go for a swift half down the Bar Galactica without bumping into at least half a dozen old muckers who've all taken a pot shot at the Doctor and missed. That week. That's the other thing about the Doctor. He's everywhere. There are some corners of the universe that have bred the most ghastly things. They must be stamped on. The Doctor is one of them. He's an inveterate do-gooder. Oh, you may think you've met do-gooders, but believe me, the Shadow Proclamation Intergalactic Rescue Captain Zepp, they got nothing on the Doctor. Why, I... If you've ever wondered why I'm simply a lower manager in the Lethal Products Division, and why, with my pedigree, I'm not in fact ruler of the planet Earth, I'll tell you. The answer has two words. Three measly syllables. The Doctor. Take the other month. I wasn't even trying to invade. I was just out to make a tidy sum of money on the London property market. The what now? I hear you gibber? Oh, dear me. If there's one thing you need to know about humans, it's that they really like their houses. I know, believe me, it's baffling. It's one thing alien invaders are always getting a bit wrong. Intergalactic art thieves are always going after the Mona Lisa or the Kohinoor diamond or some such gewgaw. No, what they're missing is the most valuable things on Earth really are small lumps of empty space surrounded by brick. They call this walled-in block of air a home. And they are obsessed by them. Any other species, a home's a home, but not humans. Getting one, selling it, getting a bigger one, sitting in each other's, being boring about them. Ugh, they worship them. If you meet a human on the streets, and let's face it, the poor things have got nowhere else to go, they'll say silly stuff like, oh, now if I had a time machine, I'd pop back and buy myself a nice bit of property before they got so pricey. Something with a roof, but it'd be grand. Well now, I do have a time machine. I also have ambition. Do you want to know who started their craze for house prices? Who made the people of Earth pay such ridiculous sums for boxes of air? Me. It was my greatest achievement. And when I say was, I mean, very sadly, was. I started small, way back in time, offering some palace-building advice to the Emperor of Japan in return for a token scrap of land. A mere nothing. Should we call it downtown Tokyo? I offloaded a whole load of disinfectant powder to some American Indians, as some English settlers had given them some rather itchy blankets in the hope of getting their hands on Manhattan. The Indians gave it to me instead. I tried advancing to Mayfair then, but even in prehistoric swampy times, that stretch of London was crazily expensive. But still, I managed it, got my hands on Hyde Park, swans and all. All I had to do then was pop forward in time, help invent the skyscraper, and collect the rents. I had myself a lovely office constructed, very shiny, with a lovely penthouse view of the Hyde Park luxury flat development. It was, by the way, quite the easiest invasion I'd ever managed. You see, you don't always have to turn up with a battle fleet. A tiny bit of charm. Not only had I stolen their planet from them, I was also getting them to carry on paying me for it. And then I had a visitor at my office. A young journalist from the Metropolitan magazine called Sarah Jane Smith. I should have spotted the threat when I saw how she was dressed. The people of Earth have invented many terrible things. Nuclear weapons, anthrax. But let me tell you, quite the worst thing is the flared trouser. Anyway, this journalist sat down and she was terribly nice, asked a lot of questions, said how lovely the tea was. They are obsessed by boiling things to death in water. If it's not tea leaves, it's Brussels sprouts. And we were looking out over all the new skyscrapers I was having built. Very impressive, she said. I've been looking at the paperwork. Oh, really? Said I, not yet smelling a rat. Yes. She fluttered her wide eyes at me. Can you explain how the land's been in your name for 2,000 years? I waved this away. Humans live such very short lives, as Miss Sarah Jane Smith was about to discover when she took a step closer to my balcony rail. I assured her I came from a long family line who all had the same name. Even the women. Fancy, she said, checking her watch, to think you've owned the property all this time and not known about the subsidence. What subsidence? I said. As I spoke, all my lovely new skyscrapers fell down. That subsidence, she said. She giggled. An actual giggle. When you're being laughed at by a chit of a thing in a flared trouser suit, you'll think your day can't get worse. Oh dear, she said. And to think, they've just found an emperor's tomb under your building site in Tokyo, making it sacred ground. Imagine not knowing that. And did you know the Carnassie Indian tribe have filed a suit against your ownership of Manhattan Island? Apparently, they've just found a piece of paper from Abraham Lincoln restoring their property. Fancy that. Oh, fancy, I growled. "It'll make a lovely article," she said, standing up and politely declining my invitation to the balcony. "I must be going. Oh, and the doctor says hello." So, yes, there we are. May have wandered a little off the bullet point there, but background information's always useful. Anyhow, that's how one of my more recent attempts failed. Perhaps. Yeah. Next slide, please. Slide 4. Have a good plan. Take it from me. Have a good plan. That's the reason I'm not the Emperor of the Earth, but I'm instead your humble Assistant Vice President of Communications, Galaxy 4 and Shopping Channels. No, really. Too kind. Always, by the way, do your own research. Never take somebody else's word for it. If you're planning on drilling out the Earth's core, or sending in an army of robot duplicates, or foamy alien seed pods that don't like the rain, then don't go with what it says in the Encyclopedia Galactica. Also, if your best plan is an army of cunning robot duplicates, then you really need to be rethinking your life choices. For one thing, you need another army of cunning robot seamstresses to sew up all those cunning duplicate outfits. And those robot seamstresses, they're unionized. Told you they were cunning. See? That's where planning comes into it. Work out what could go wrong and take steps to prevent it. Always think 3 steps ahead, if not 4. If you think there's the slightest chance your invasion fleet could come under attack from an ancient weapon, don't reveal its location to anyone. Similarly, beware of big red buttons. Now, I know we've all met those shiny salesmen who pop round to kit out your secret base or space station, and they do love their big red buttons. I'll tell you why now. They get a massive bonus for every one they sell. Better safe than sorry, they'll assure you while planning their luxury cruise with the wife and hatchlings. Don't fall for it. If your plan includes a big red button that'll activate the death rays, some idiot will only go and press it early. Trust me. Also, never, ever, ever fall for the salesman when they tell you to install an auto-destruct button. The only people who buy those are chumps. Honestly, install one of those things and I guarantee in under a day you'll be scrabbling for the escape shuttle yelling, "Damn you, Doctor, damn you," while your base does the fireball Macarena. No, ignore gadgets. Ignore buttons. You don't even, shocking but true, need a designer secret base. A shed'll do if your plan's good enough. But how do you get a good plan? Well, next slide, please. Slide 5. The sure plan. What, my good friends, is a lecture without a catchy mnemonic? Why, I didn't get to be Vice President of Galactic Operations and Telephony at the Darkon Corporation without a mnemonic. I use the following little beauty. S-U-R-E. A good invasion needs to be strategic, unbeatable, rewarding, excellent. Strategic. Think it through. Don't just blast it out of the sky. Work out what you're going to do with the population. It's no good phasering them when you could sell them off as slaves, is it? Unbeatable. Work out what could go wrong. Plan around it. If necessary, eliminate your threatening neighbors on the way. Rewarding. Do not, and I cannot repeat this often enough, fail to look up a mineralogical survey. I've lost count of the number of warlords who spent their whole fleet capturing a giant lump of gravel. And finally, excellent. You want a plan that knocks everyone's socks off. Ooh, you want them saying jealously into their mandibles. That Darkon Corporation sure pulled off a pippin. For example, I had a real corker of a plan the other week that really cut the mustard. Did it pass the sure test? It sure did. Yeah. It was simple, really. In the 20th century, the planet Earth was split down the middle by animosity between America and Russia. I popped back to Russia's 1917 revolution with a lovely little plan. It was unbeatable, because I wouldn't be doing any of the fighting, the Russians would. It would be immensely rewarding, It cost me a pocket of small change. My strategy was simple. The Russian Revolution was complicated and fiddly, a lot of it because the country's so cold. What if I caused a heat ray-induced microclimate? Control the weather, you'd control the revolution. I'd be able to pick which side won, and then I'd be able to alter the entire destiny of the 20th century just by buying an off-the-shelf heat ray from a catalogue and glancing at a weather forecast from time to time. In short, my plan was excellent. I could play revolutionaries off against SARS all the while sitting back and washing down some caviar with something from the cellar. Excellent? Impeccable. Of course, all that would have been fine, Now, bear with me. This does actually illustrate my point, more or less. You see, sometimes there is no such thing as a sure thing. I pottered down one morning, a little late due to too much caviar, and there was a problem. The bally noise should have tipped me off, the distant sound of laughter and splashing. But mostly, I was staring at the large amount of scarf taking up my dining table. "Hello there!" It was the doctor, sat at the table. "Pot of coffee? You look like you need one." He'd brought help. He always does. Dapper man in a Russian army outfit came in, clicked his heels together, handed me a coffee. "That," said the doctor, "was Harry. He does like to give his pets names. He's a military surgeon and he's quite busy today." And then, quite bafflingly, he called out to him, "Off you trot, Harry, and don't change into your trunks until you've finished." The young man amazingly replied, "Righty-ho." Righty-ho. One word. One word that tells you why the doctor needs to be crushed. Crushed into bits and then jumped up and down on. Righty-ho, indeed. I took a sip of my coffee and surveyed the doctor. Ruefully, it has to be said. I knew the game was up. Plus, the coffee was excellent. "What have you done?" I asked.
"Have a peek out of the window," suggested the doctor. "You'll like this. Not a lot. Not at all, but..."
I looked. I did not like. There was a beach. In Moscow. There were sun parasols and golden sands and countesses in bathing costumes going down slides and young revolutionaries trying to look cross on pedalos. "Is that Lenin on an inflatable giraffe?" The doctor smeared some toast with marmalade and ate it.
"It's not all water polo, you know," he spoke through the crumbs. "If you use these opera glasses, you'll see my young friend Harry tending to a lot of wounded soldiers. They're the ones on the sun loungers. He's really a very good surgeon, and dear Sarah is running a soup kitchen. Well, it's more of an ice cream van, but a lot of them are so very hungry."
The doctor jumped up with a bang.
"You should always lock your heat ray up at night. We cranked up the settings to 11 and gave them this. One gloriously sunny day on a beach. It's hard not to get along when the sun shines just right. And you know what? I think these people deserve it. A lot of them, so many of them, will lead utterly awful, miserably short lives. And I can't do anything for them. But I can, just about, give them one nice day. And an ice cream with a flake in it."
"Funny, really," the doctor considered. "Everyone talks about Christmas football in the trenches. No one talks about the Moscow beach party. But perhaps they should."
"And tomorrow," he sighed regretfully, "I'll let it all go back to normal."
But you've interfered," I began. The doctor stuck his hands in his pockets and watched some spoilt young girls trying to work out how to use a log flume.
"I've healed the wounds of some poor boy soldiers. I've made Lenin laugh. I've given a doomed Tsarina an ice cream headache. I think I can live with myself."
He walked out the door. That's the thing about the doctor. You can come up with a system, but no system, not one, not never, is doctor-proof. The best thing you can do is follow my guidance and hope, just hope, that he's busy that day. Doesn't sound like much, but believe me, it's the best I can offer the Darkon Corporation. Should we have tea and bickies before the next slide? Did we all enjoy our custard creams? Lovely. So, slide 6, predict the unpredictable. As president of intergalactic operations and smiting, people often say to me, how can you predict the unpredictable? To which I say to them, laddie, that's no excuse after the event. I've lost count of the times I've bumped into raggedy little battle fleets, limping home, bleating away with one excuse or another.
How were we to know our army of android duplicates was allergic to ginger pop?
Who knew our giant death spider would be so flammable?
Rotten luck. We were double booked with the Cybermen.
Piffle. The reason why we all keep having a go at Earth is that it's such a tough nut to crack. As you can see from what I've been telling you, I've grown to expect these little bumps in the road. Why, the last time I actually made the Earth's sheer unpredictability predictable. That was my USP. Do you know that people of Earth spend their whole lives wishing they knew their futures? Of course, if we all had our way, their future would be a darkening sky and a slave mine. But humans are obsessed by wanting to know what happens next. They shower gold on aging devs who've never learned how to apply eyeshadow. They pay fortunes to moon calves in polo necks, just because these people claim to be mystics and astrologers. I sensed a gap in the market. After all, I own a time machine. I really could tell people their futures. I picked a gullible idiot with money. He worked in advertising. The only interesting thing about Mr. Scudamore was his first name, Elias. Oh, and he believed he had the power to summon dark forces onto his living room carpet. One evening, he'd pushed back the coffee table, lit the joysticks, and had barely begun the old Evo Evo Away nonsense when I popped up out of the smoke, sulphur, and the back of my TARDIS, having disguised the old girl as a settee.
Greetings, Elias Scudamore, I intoned. I am the mystic monk, and I bring you your future.
He was terribly impressed. So impressed that poor long-suffering Mrs. Scudamore came in from doing the washing up to see what the fuss was.
Not now, you silly cow, he hissed at her, barring the door. The Great One has arisen.
Elias pressed me with all the mundane things that earthlings like to dream about. Money, money, would he have more money? He also wanted to know if he would live a long life and have his name forever linked with a long list of singers and actresses. I hastily assured him that he would. I'd done my research. Also, Elias Scudamore was very good at advertising, and I needed him on the side. I told him to wait a week. It was then I slipped out again from behind the sofa. He was very eager to see me, having just won the lotto. Mystic Monk, he pressed me, you've changed my life for the better already. I noticed there was no sign of Mrs. Scudamore. She'd gone to see her sister in Suffolk, leaving the housekeeping in charge of someone called Greta, who'd popped in from work. I offered Elias further fame and fortune, hinting at next week's horse racing winners. In return, he agreed to launch me on the world. Next slide, please. Slide 7, an introduction to brand management. Here's what Mr. Scudamore taught me. If you're going to invade the world, you're going to need a logo. A logo is your name, arranged very expensively in ugly letters. Doesn't matter how ugly, as you just tell everyone that it's brilliant. Then you swiftly replace it with another logo, even uglier, more expensive, and you assure everyone even more brilliant. The constant rearrangement of your logo is all part of your breathtaking brand strategy. It's something so devious, sometimes I wonder if I'm not behind it all at some point. This logo tells everyone how dynamic and yet playful you are, Mr. Scudamore assured me. I just thought it told everyone I'd been had. Really, graphic designers are the most miserable people, and oh my dears, the cost. Once I got designers on board, that's when the Cybermen became allergic to gold. Having finally picked a logo, Mr. Scudamore devoted himself to rebranding my image. The cloak thing's very good, very dark, his assistant Greta explained to me. But it made me a set of purple robes with gold stars sewn into them and a pointy purple hat. This look tests terribly well, Greta assured me. Then they had me make some videos which they posted on their internet, where I made some startling predictions. Thanks to being able to pop off and check in my TARDIS, all of these came very swiftly true. I could have predicted natural disasters, a famine in Africa, the horrifying behaviour of a terrorist cell. But they just wanted to know about who won a football match, a ballroom dancing championship, and a cake-baking competition. Yes, everyone, yes. This is the planet you're invading. No, I have no idea why it's so hard. I think that's what makes it so challenging. Anyway, the very next week after my Mystic Monk videos went online, the invitations came flooding in. Everyone wanted me to sit in fake chairs in television studios talking to people with gastric bands.
Joining us on the sofa today for a spooky look at the stars. Do you believe in the future? I don't, but here's a chap who does. Isn't it just brilliant? We've a brilliant fortune teller here right now. Brilliant. Tell me, Mystic Monk, what does the future hold? Well, Genie, your latest diet is going to cause you kidney failure, and your footballer husband's going to leave you for the goalkeeper. Brilliant.
Now, I shouldn't have said that, but it'd been a very long day, and the whole thing had been utterly tedious. Anyway, my televisual appearance won me a lot of public attention. Members of the public had been allowed to phone in, and I'd been able to answer their questions. This had required some careful temporal engineering. This was a year when everyone called Haley from Biggleswade scored an A in their physics exams, which, I have to tell you, rather revolutionised the British science industry for the better. No, I know what you're thinking. How was this conquering the Earth? I tell you, I was conquering the people. With charm. I was making them happy. I was spending laborious evenings providing extra tuition in quantum mechanics to a very bright young girl and assuring her that, no matter what her friend Pippa told her, the be-all and end-all of life was not working in a salon called We've Got It Nailed. It took 3 months. 3 months of regular TV appearances. I became a celebrity. I even went on that ballroom dancing programme. And one. By that point, everyone in the entire country was hanging on to my every word. The Prime Minister had asked me a jokey question, got a serious answer, and now I was consulting him. Without firing a single shot, I was running the United Kingdom. Mr. Scudamore was now so rich he was talking about brand diversification. There was my own show, a book, merchandising, and Mystic Monk-alikes. He'd hired a lot of unemployed actors to open village fates and mutter a few little foretellings I'd researched. It was all, I have to tell you, deeply undignified. And also the straw that very nearly broke the camel's back. I was running the country, and it was simply exhausting. You may think the Darkon Corporation is a bureaucracy, but boy, you're an efficient one. I've no idea where the meetings came from, but suddenly my day was meetings, and conference calls, and away days, and... what? Oh, why, yes. An away day is where a group of people sit in a mildewy conference suite at a not very nice airport hotel and talk nonsense. I've been in Dalek torture cells with better catering. So there I was, sat at an away day. There was a presentation on imminent strategization and forward planning. Curiously, nobody had asked my opinion. Mr. Scudamore had turned up late in a new sports car. He avoided my eye and was playing with his phone. Two young men were squabbling over the last rocket and prawn snack wrap, and I thought to myself, is this really what winning looks like? It was at this point I was rather glad that the doctor turned up. I saw him through the window. He was sitting in the playground on a little plastic seesaw, right underneath the flight path. It was the one with the scarf again. I went out to join him. We sat on the seesaw, bumping up and down. For a while, we didn't speak. Just listened to the planes taking holidaymakers to and from Luton.
It won't do, you know, said the doctor.
You're probably right, I agreed.
I saw you doing the tango on the telly the other day,
he admitted.
Very good.
Thank you. Actually, I was rather proud of that.
I even voted for you,
he added.
Quite a lot.
How much? I asked, suspiciously. He flapped a hand in the air and blew some imaginary dust away.
Neither here nor there. Anyway, look at you. You've helped people win the lottery. You've set up quite a few marriages. You've got people the job of their dreams.
And now, I control the country, I gloated.
Maybe,
he smiled. I run this place, I sneered, and I've done it without firing a shot. You can't object.
No, of course I can't. You've just made a lot of people happy.
An incidental benefit?
Well, who cares?
The doctor shrugged.
So long as you're happy.
We bounced up and down for a bit. One moment the doctor was up in the clouds. The next, I was. It was oddly calming. I looked around. That girl in the nightmare trousers had appeared in the playground, along with the handsome young man dressed like a Cossack. They were on the swings. Listen, I said to the doctor, I've got to be getting back.
I see,
he said. You know, meetings. We've got a focus group this afternoon. They'll be going over the new logo.
How thrilling for you.
We bounced up and down a bit more. Can you stop this? I pleaded. I want to get off. I came to the ground with a bump.
Have fun, the doctor said.
I walked away. I turned back. The doctor, Sarah Jane Smith and Harry were waving at me. I went back to the conference suite. Or rather, I didn't. I went and found Mrs. Scudamore and we went on a motoring holiday in the Brecon Beacons. Had a lovely time.
Next slide, please. Slide 8, winning and after. Anyway, to conclude. I've had a lovely time giving you my annual lecture as chairman and chief executive officer of the Darkon Corporation. I hope you found the last few minutes as useful as I have. You'll forgive me if I've kept popping off the stage every now and then, or perhaps you've not noticed. Busy chap like me always has errands to run, ladders to climb. The space-time continuum forever needs a little nip and tuck here and there. Anyway, let's just have a look what's going to happen next to my glorious company, shall we? Ah, yes. Looking at these reports, the Darkon Corporation's battle fleets have never been at fuller strength. The armies are all in tip-top shape. The mighty engines of really awesome destructive capability, all charged to the limit. Lovely. Forget planet Earth. It's a mug's game. Let's sweep out across the cosmos and really do some damage. I said, let's really do some damage! Oh, cracking. No one will ever forget the terrible onslaught of the Darkon Corporation. And I'm going to show you how. Next slide, please. Slide 9, in conclusion. Yes, in conclusion, and at the end of the day... Oh, hello, what's this? This isn't the right slide. Who? What's it say? Dear you, hello there. While you've been giving your lovely little pep talk, Sarah, Harry and I have been jolly busy. Buying stocks, shares and whatnot. Mounting a corporate takeover. Terribly sorry, we're now in charge of the Darkon Corporation. You pesky beggar. Pleased to announce it's now a charitable organization. What? The largest fleet of emergency food ships? Massed forces of medics? Mighty engines of really awesome free energy capability? All now leading the Darkon Corporation to spread out across the galaxy. Do some good. Enjoy looking after that lot. We'll do you good too. Toodle-pip, the doctor.
P.S. Just made you into the greatest philanthropist the galaxy's ever known. What?